tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Marty Johnson reporting. The head of one of Syria's most powerful rebel groups is dead, killed in an airstrike near Damascus. The Syrian army is claiming responsibility for the strike on the meeting of the Army of Islam that killed 42-year-old founder Zanroun Alush and several other leaders of the group. The opposition group was one of the largest and has already appointed a top field commander as Alush's replacement. The death is seen, however, as a significant blow to the armed opposition, bolstering President Bashar al-Assad ahead of new peace talks scheduled for early next year. An Iraqi army spokesman says airstrikes are being used to detonate some of the landmines and booby traps in order to move forward in Ramadi. Iraqi troops have pushed deeper into the heart of the last remaining district of the city held by the Islamic State for the past 7 months. One member of the Iraqi counterterrorism team thinks Ramadi will be liberated from militants soon.
Only a small distance separates them from us. We are watching them coming out. We have killed many of them, and our snipers have taken positions on the roofs of the houses of Ramadi.
The fall of Ramadi, which is a mainly Sunni city just 2 hours by car from Baghdad, was a major setback for the Iraqi government, which has watched the militant group sweep through huge parts of Iraq since 2014. South Sudan's president, Salva Kiir, has dissolved the country's 10 states and established 28 new ones in their place. A move critics say undermines the power-sharing deal signed in August after a 2-year civil war. Rebel leadership has not yet issued a response to the president's action. President Kiir and rebel chief Riek Machar have repeatedly accused each other of breaking the peace deal. This week, the rebels and the government met in Juba in hopes of forming a transitional government of national unity. This is VOA News. Authorities in the Central African Republic have postponed national elections by 3 days, pushing them back to December 30th. We have this report from Bangui.
5 days ahead of elections to choose a new president and parliament, voter cards had just arrived in the Bangui neighborhood of Boeing, next to the airport in Central African Republic's capital. Electoral workers are busy sorting the cards. We're trying to put them in alphabetical order. It takes longer because many of the workers and voters can't read and write. On Thursday, authorities delayed elections by 3 days until December 30th, saying preparations for the voting were taking longer than expected, especially the training of poll workers. Ballots only arrived in the capital on Wednesday, too late for the UN peacekeeping mission, known as MINUSCA, to deliver the material to the provinces. Already long delayed, Central Africans and international organizations hope the elections will turn a page in the 3-year-long conflict that erupted after rebels ousted President François Bozizé in 2013. Katrina Höye, VOA News, Bangui.
Israeli police say they have shot and killed a Palestinian man who tried to stab one of their officers in Jerusalem in the latest deadly incident in a 3-month spate of violence. On Friday, Israeli soldiers fatally shot a Palestinian woman in the occupied West Bank and a 22-year-old man near the border fence in Gaza. President Obama celebrated Christmas in Hawaii with a visit to the Marine Corps base and celebrated leisure time with family.
And it's still dangerous, as we saw this past week. We had some outstanding brave men and women who were killed. And so we never take for granted what all of you do for the American people. You help keep us free, you help keep us strong, and whatever service you're in, whatever branch, we are extraordinarily grateful for everything that you do every single day.
Earlier in the day, as you just heard, the president made phone calls to other service members from each branch of the military stationed around the world. A fast-moving brush fire early today in Southern California has threatened more than 24 homes and forced evacuations, closing stretches of highways. The blaze started about 11 p.m. local time Friday in Ventura County and burned 100 acres near the Solimar Beach by 1 a.m. An hour after that, it had grown to nearly 3 or 4 times that size. In England, homes are being evacuated and cars are submerged. Boats are being brought into help people to safety, with workers like this one facing down floods.
We've been out up in Cumbria first and putting out the defences in readiness for what looked to be another biblical rainstorm. And then overnight, last night, we were down in Lancashire getting ready for weather.
That's right. It's a boxing holiday, Boxing Day holiday in England, but they are boxing up their goods to get them out of the floods. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Plotty in Washington.
Any political violence at any rate is not good because it takes away from the need for us to have a credible, you know, free and fair election next year.
The Law Association of Zambia urges supporters of political parties not to engage in politically motivated violence in the run-up to next year's poll.
The Trade Union Congress, of course, together with other progressive formations, are putting up demands which were expecting in February.
Pro-democracy groups in Swaziland plan a series of activities aimed at pressuring the government to allow for more democratic reforms.
They do exchange of gifts. Some bring food even to the church. And after service, we have a common meal together. In fact, there is a variety.
Christians and Muslims in Cameroon celebrate Christmas to encourage interreligious tolerance. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Of the Law Association of Zambia, or LAZ, has called on political parties to urge their supporters not to engage in politically motivated violence in the run-up to next year's election. This following recent clashes between supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front and the main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND, in which dozens of people were injured. Other association and civil society groups also accused police of using excessive force to stop their meetings as they prepare for the 2016 poll. Law Association Chairman George Chisanga told me that the police should be impartial in carrying out their mandate to maintain law and order.
The first thing I need to advise is to allay the fears of the gravity of these political skirmishes, as you point out. What actually is happening is that there are some sporadic experiences of violence, mainly between the Patriotic Front and the UPND. And mostly it's happening along the line of rail, but also elsewhere where the leaders have gone to try and do what is called party mobilization ahead of the next election. As you are aware, we haven't formally opened up the campaign period, but party leaders are feeling obliged to try and keep in touch with their membership around the country. And it is in these meetings that sometimes the members of the opposing political parties are meeting to clash. Not so much to at a level that should raise deep concern, but any political violence at any rate is not good because it takes away from the need for us to have a credible, you know, and free and fair election next year.
They also raise concerns about the police using excessive force to dispel some opposition supporters or some political parties. And these supporters are saying the police are not being fair and impartial in such matters. Yeah. What are your views?
That is quite a historical problem here, Peter, because what we have experienced as stakeholders, that mainly the police seem to be of the disposition that they have the responsibility of allowing or not allowing people to convene or to exercise their freedom of expression as is provided for in the Constitution. For a long time, we as LAZ have reminded the police that their responsibility is actually to provide security and to provide order while people are being allowed to enjoy their freedoms under the Constitution. But the history of this problem is that the police always feel that they have a duty to do a favor to the party in government and create a very uneven, you know, campaign platform between political parties, depending on whether you are in opposition or in government. The latest experience we've had, which LAZ has condemned very strongly, is where a police used a tear gas canister to disperse a small group of, you know, opposing political parties, the Movement for Multi-Party Democracy, who were having a mobilization meeting within a confine of a building, on the pretext that they didn't get, or at least they applied for permit, and the permit was not given to them by the police. Now, that is not what is required under the law. First, you don't need a permit to meet in a scenario of where those people were meeting just to mobilize themselves. And secondly, it is not a requirement of the police to deny you a permit. The police should just receive your notification and allow you to go ahead with the freedom of expression. Now, like I said, this problem has got a history. As the major stakeholders in the administration of justice in the country, we as LAZ have demanded that we must have an urgent stakeholders meeting where we can remind the police of their responsibility under the law. Their responsibility is to enable people to enjoy the freedoms under the Constitution and not to prevent them from exercising their constitutional rights.
Mr. Chisanga, what role will the civil society play alongside the Law Association of Zambia in demanding from police to ensure an equal playing field in terms of protecting civilians irrespective of their political affiliations?
Firstly, we want to go on a campaign of reminding the people of Zambia that the Constitution has provisions that give them rights. Freedom of assembly is their constitutional right. Freedom of expression is their constitutional right. Secondly, we want to make a demand to the police and through them to the Minister of Home Affairs to ensure that the police are given specific guidelines on how they are going to provide security for those who would like to enjoy their freedoms as enshrined under the Constitution. The civil society is beginning to mobilize itself to see what role they can play, and our role is basically to try and remind the police to carry out their functions objectively and without favoritism.
What will be your message to the people of Zambia in this directive? Because in a few months' time, election will be organized.
I think the people of Zambia should not relent to carry out their responsibility to listen to the political players who are going around the country, either mobilizing, which is what they're doing right now, or campaigning when they begin to campaign. They should not relent to listen and take a message so they can have an informed position as we go to the next election. Because, see, voting is both a right and a responsibility, due to the extent that you have a responsibility to put the correct people in office. If the Patriotic Front's message is going to be listened to, the people are going to vote for them. If the opposition's message is going to be listened to, the people are going to vote. But what Zambians must do, they must remain calm and they must be attentive to the people who are going around, speaking to them on how they would like to govern them, including the Patriotic Front itself, which is in power.
George Chisanga is the head of the Law Association of Zambia, or LAZ. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Swaziland's outlawed trade union federation and other pro-democracy groups are planning a series of activities in February to pressure King Eswatini III and his government to improve living conditions for public sector workers. Wandile Dludlu is the national coordinator for pro-democracy group known as the Swaziland United Democratic Front, or SUDF. He told me that those supporting public workers will also urge regional groups and the international community to help them pressure the government for more democratic reforms.
We continue to build mass power on the ground. The Trade Union Congress, to course, together with other progressive formations, are putting up demands which were expecting in February. Demands around increment in salaries for workers, better working conditions, but primarily the issue of a new and democratic Swaziland are some of the key demands that we are putting up in the beginning of the year 2016.
But Wandile, the government has said that due to recent economic downturns, it doesn't have the money to meet some of these demands. So how do you think the government can fund or meet some of your demands when it comes to improving living conditions or living wages?
Yes, we've heard already the Prime Minister and the Minister responsible saying there must be tightening of belts by workers. The reason why we're putting up this demand is because on one hand, they are saying the workers must tighten up their belts, but they at the top are loosening their own belts, spending more. They will be buying new cars, a fleet of cars for the SADC. You will remember that next year Swaziland is hosting SADC. Swaziland is already scheduled to buy well over 200 million. Worth of new cars, the expenditure of the monarchy is going up. But on the other hand, they are saying to the multitudes of workers, we must tighten belts. So it is on the basis of that we're putting up and continuing not to listen at all, because they seem not to walk their talk.
But Swaziland has an international obligation, being a prominent member of SADC. Don't you think it should meet its obligation
Yes, we understand and accept that they have a regional responsibility to host as such logistically and other things. But we believe that cannot be done in an extravagant way. That cannot be done at the expense of the abject poverty that continue to ground and grind Swaziland. As I'm speaking, I'm on my way to the southern part of Swaziland that has been ravaged by drought. That has resulted to well over almost 150 million worth of cows have died for ordinary citizens. And government has done nothing to help them. And so we say, like the government of Malawi, we are seeing them cutting their expenditure ever since the coming of a new president, which is a great example that you can continue to meet your regional responsibility, but at a very reasonable spending. But what we have seen the king doing is his usual valuable appetite for leisure and pleasure at the expense of our people.
What does this industrial action that your group is planning entail?
Of course, it has not taken a full shape as yet, but we're looking forward to a series of marches and petitions to the Prime Minister's office and the relevant ministries. But it will also be a number of press conferences where we will be lobbying nationally and internationally more people to support the call for democratization of Swaziland, as well as a better working conditions for our people.
Wouldn't you be putting your members in danger because the government has often accused your members of fomenting trouble, of undermining the country's peace and security, as well as undermining the government's ability to maintain the country's territorial integrity?
The ball is in their court, my brother. We'll continue to do our part, pushing and doing our best to mobilize masses and sometimes succeeding, sometimes not succeeding, but we're looking up to a very powerful march coming in the beginning of the year. We will leave it to the government how they respond, whether they resort to their usual violent response, but that will not and should not and must not deter us in doing mass action on the ground to, of course, popularize the demands that we have put forward.
Wandile Dludlu is the National Coordinator for the Swaziland United Democratic Front, or SUDF. He spoke with me from the capital, Mbabane. Before fighting broke out in South Sudan, the ruling SPLM party was accused of widespread corruption. Justin Fleschner, a policy analyst with the Enough Project, spoke to South Sudan in Focus reporter Ian Buer. Fleschner says now that the SPLM-IO officials are back in Juba, significant progress can be made on implementing the peace deal and ending corruption.
South Sudan actually has some of the most robust rules and regulations on things like revealing beneficial owners of different companies and public disclosure rules for officials that are working in the Ministry of Petroleum to ensure that there are no conflicts of interest. A lot of it is just about, A, making sure that civil society groups are aware of what already exists in these rules and regulations and how they can use those, and then also ensuring that there's space for civil society and for journalists to operate in the country to report on instances of alleged corruption without retribution or retaliation against them. And that's something that needs to be prioritized in diplomatic circles. The report talks about sources of conflict financing. It talks about policy tools and interventions that are available to the international community to push the economy towards peace as a whole, rather than just talking about kind of the political and the diplomatic side of things.
And could you give us examples of what those policy tools and intervention tools are that that people can use to stop the illicit economy in South Sudan?
The Department of Treasury in the United States has a financial crimes enforcement network. There's also the Department of Justice has a new bureau for kleptocracy. And these are some of the bilateral tools that exist in addition to kind of more multilateral efforts to tackle corruption, money laundering, and other activities like this.
And in the report, you wrote about war profiteers. Could you tell us what that's about?
These are individuals and entities that seek to profit from the turmoil created by conflict, whether that is providing loans and support in exchange for access and entitlements later on. It could be from doing arms trafficking or providing other sources of material or financial support to the warring parties. And so this is something that needs to be investigated further. Specific individuals and entities have to be looked into in order to ensure that there aren't individuals that are actually profiting from the continuation of the conflict.
The first batch of SPLM-IO advance team has landed in South Sudan today. Is there a chance that the leaders, both political leaders as well as IGAD Plus and JMEC, are better positioned to stop the flow of illicit economies in South Sudan?
Now that we are beginning to see the parties return to Juba to make progress in implementation, can we also now move forward on the ambitious reform agenda laid out in the peace agreement with oversight and accountability from JMEC? And so that remains to be seen. But this is absolutely a critical first step in that direction.
Justine Fleschner is a police analyst with the Enough Project. She spoke with South Sudan in Focus reporter Ian Buell from New Jersey. Christians and Muslims in Cameroon jointly celebrated Christmas to encourage tolerance in a country that has suffered violence by religious-based extremism. Imams joined pastors and priests to pray for God's protection for the Central African country. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Christians sing at the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, to celebrate the birth of Jesus. Among them are Muslims traditionally invited to celebrate the feast. But this year, Muslim cleric Ibrahim Tuku is given 5 minutes to preach.
Allah, nous te prions et te demandons de
respecter. He says Muslims have joined Christians at Christmas to pray for peace, security and stability to reign in Cameroon. He says they are also praying that God protect Cameroon from its enemy, Boko Haram, which is preaching division and hatred, killing, stealing and raping, pretending to be serving God. At the Cameroon Baptist Convention, one of the oldest Cameroonian churches, its pastor, Chalmaine Diteme, says they have also invited everyone, Muslims and Christians, to celebrate the day with them.
They do exchange of gifts. Some bring food even to the church. And after service, we have a common meal together. In fact, there is a variety. But the bottom line is that Christmas is a symbol, is a significance of the love of God for humanity.
Clementina Wanga, a member of the congregation at the Evangelical Lutheran Church, says besides church services, their pastors have been encouraging faithful to share with Muslims at home. She says she is a Christian, but has been receiving not only her Christian brethren, but also Muslims. She says when Muslims have their own religious events, they invite her and she attends, adding that Muslim dignitaries always respect her pastor's invitation to their church when they have events. She says her pastor has asked them to live peacefully with Muslims. Cameroon's neighbors have been suffering rising religious intolerance. Nigeria is threatened by the Islamist group Boko Haram, and Central African Republic grapples with the Christian anti-Balaka and the Muslim Seleka conflicts. Irene Gunga, a refugee from CAR, says Cameroon should preserve the peaceful cohabitation among its religious denominations to stop the type of carnage that our country has witnessed. She says, unlike in our country, where Christians and Muslims are at each other's throats, fighting and killing, there is peaceful coexistence between religions in Cameroon. She says Cameroon should do everything to preserve it. Cameroon has had a history of interreligious tolerance and peaceful coexistence with other denominations until the Nigerian extremist group Boko Haram began attacking the country as it fought to create an Islamic State in Western and Central Africa. Last year, Cameroon arrested dozens of Muslim clerics and their faithful for collaborating with the terrorist group. Boko Haram's allegiance to Islamic State sparked fears the country may come under the influence of extremists. All influential Muslim clerics were invited to the capital and urged to reject such teachings. In March this year, Cameroon hosted a conference on Islamic fundamentalism and extremism to educate Muslim clerics about the dangers espoused by extremist groups. 20% of the population of Cameroon is Muslim, 40% is Christian, and the rest hold indigenous beliefs. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The UN Children's Fund warns poor rainfall and the El Nino weather phenomenon are putting hundreds of thousands of children at risk of hunger and disease in parts of Eastern and Southern Africa. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Some countries in Eastern and Southern Africa have endured two seasons of poor or non-existent rainfall. This situation is being exacerbated by a strong El Niño, a warming weather phenomenon that is expected to peak in the first few months of the new year. The UN Children's Fund reports the well-being of hundreds of thousands of children already suffering from food shortages is likely to worsen under these conditions. For example, it notes more than 10 million people in Ethiopia are going hungry, and this number is likely to increase to 15 million in 2016. It says 350,000 children could need treatment for severe acute malnutrition next year. UNICEF reports food emergencies are affecting around 855,000 people in Somalia, and the number of people currently short of food in Zimbabwe is expected to triple between January and March to 1.5 million. The UN agency says it is particularly concerned about high levels of malnutrition among young children in Malawi. Spokesman Christoph Bouyarak says UNICEF is carrying out a mass screening for malnutrition in children under 5 across 90% of the country.
We fear hunger in Malawi, where almost half of the children are already undernourished, because Malawi struggles to cope with drought and with the first maize deficit in a decade.
Bouyarak says Malawi has been taking a beating from a combination of terrible weather events. He says El Nino, severe flooding, and a prolonged drought, as well as a stagnant economy, have added to the country's food shortages.
A recent vulnerability assessment revealed that 2.8 million people in Malawi are in need of urgent food aid. Even if official figures are saying that malnutrition cases are not increasing, we know from past experience that this may not be the whole story.
UNICEF estimates nearly 4% of Malawian children under 5 suffer from severe acute malnutrition, a fatal condition for young children. The agency says its screening program is designed to ferret out vulnerable children so they can be given life-saving therapeutic treatment before it is too late. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Next on Let's Talk, managing money. Do you find it difficult to do? Are you saving for your education, marriage, or retirement? Join host Sunday Shamari and his guests discussing managing money. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis recently took his message of religious tolerance to Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss interfaith solutions to combat religious intolerance and extremism. That's next time on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University.
Young me.
All right, now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
All my people get down on it. Everybody get down on it. All my people get down on it. Everybody get down. This one is very funny. Back then me, I broke nobody used to love me. Say me I'm nothing, but just no hesitating. I got my mind racing, every day me paper chasing. The people say me I'm jonesing. Right now me and my people we are balling. We are go to the club every day and nights we popping. Everybody clubbing, the people them are jumping. I'm making money. The people say I join Illuminati, yeah. But I really don't know. Now because I'm making money. The people say I join Illuminati, yeah. Well, I don't know what to say. Everybody get down. Get down on it. Everybody get down. Get down on it. All my people get down. Get down on it. Everybody get down. Yeah. I'm not here to impress anyone. Yeah. So if you the vex, brother, please no vex. I'm not here to oppress. Sometimes I ask myself, I wonder how I got this far. I'm missing, boy, nobody used to care after us. I ask myself, I wonder how I got this far. I'm the same person, nobody care about. Yeah, right now I'm making money. Them say me I join Illuminati. Yeah, I don't know. Hey, right now I'm making money. Them say me I join Illuminati. Yeah, I really don't know. All my people get down on it. Everybody get down on it. All my people get. Me, I join Illuminati, yeah. I don't know. Hey, right now I'm making money. They say me, I join Illuminati, yeah. I really don't know. All my people get down on it. Everybody get down on it. All my people get down on it. Everybody
Perish,
are you ready? Yeah, no, no, no. Hey. Won't back by me, but Oluwa, yeah.
won't fight back, no. You know why? You can't bring me down, no. No matter how you try, you can't make me frown, no. I can never go down, no. Man on log, man on log, man on log, oh way. Man on log, man on log, man on log, oh way. Man on log, oh way. See, every time I can struggle, they want me kind of die. They want control my life. You and Obi, then give me life. They want me to frown. They want me kind of die. Every day I they go up, up, my brother, I don't go stop. God give me power to conquer my enemies. And I get the authority over principality. I say man on get that man on get that man on get that 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 get that. What thing that happens in life is when you progress and people they vex you. Ice, because the paper in the rest and they see you they want to they vex you. Yeah, baby Gandhi, lele Gandhi, lele lele lele. Hey, baby you wanna 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 you up a go. Go down, go down, go low. Baby go down, go low. I like it the way that you clip on my finger and they make me the one and I go slow. Baby, oh no.
My baby body, oh body, my Mix. What the wild panda? kwani ne bumo. Yeah, my girl, if I go do anything, I go do my very well for you. I'm putting all my trust in you, 'cause I'm in love with you. It's like I've proven myself and everything depends on you. I can't get my eyes off you. Girl, I'm in love with you. I wanna make him a kwani ne bumo.
Girl, are you be the one?
Ever, ever, I'm in.
And I'm losing my mind.
Baby, come closer, you're far away.
Wherever you are.
Don't even think that I let you to suffer. 'Cause you are my angel, my lover. And I'm screaming.
I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. Girl, I cannot do without you. Let me be the one beside you. I say I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Love you.
You are the woman of my dreams. The person I'm facing for me.
Yeah, in a woman. Yeah. If all I'm in. Yeah. Girl, I wanna be a man and I want you to be my boo. My life is incomplete without you, 'cause I'm in love with you. Some say that I've been deceiving myself by involving myself with you. I swear not only you, 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 you. I fit to tell I do.
Makagini,
makanine humo.
Girl, are you the one?
Ewo, ewo la me.
And I'm losing my mind.
Baby, make you come closer where you there.
Wherever you are.
Don't even think that I let you to suffer. 'Cause you are my angel, my lover. And I'm screaming.
I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Hey,
girl, I cannot do without you. Let me be the one beside you. I say I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Love you. You are the woman of my dreams. The person I'm facing for me. Hey, hey. In a woman. I want to be. I don't care what people say. 'Cause my love is here to stay. And I go do anything for you. Girl, I pledge my love for you. 'Cause I'm in love with you.
Girl, are you the one?
Hey, what?
And I'm losing my mind.
And I'm losing my mind. Where you there?
Wherever you are.
Wherever you are.
Whatever
it takes. I'll be there for you.
'Cause I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Hey,
girl, I cannot do without you.
I cannot do without you.
Let me be the one beside you.
Be the one beside you.
I say I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
I love you.
You are the woman of
the woman of my dreams.
The person I'm facing,
the person I'm facing for me. Hey, when I look into your eyes, I'm a wife by the sea. Forever together, you and I are meant to be. Don't doubt me. You be the person I'm facing for me. Yeah, only you feel be my love.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Yang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Yang.
Hello, Africa. It is always a pleasure for me to share my reflections on U.S. policy towards Africa. I always pay close attention to African opinions on attitudes towards the United States. This week, many issues around the world are very much looked at by Americans as they look towards the new year and as they look at the relationship with the rest of the world. What is very interesting for President Obama as he moved towards the end of the year 2015 and looking towards 2016 for himself, his family, and the rest of the people in the United States. For the peoples of the United States, as they look at Africa, they can see how political development is taking place in many of them, because many of the African countries since independence have been toying with state building and nation building. Some of them have made progress in creating unity among their people, and the pressing issues of human development is the politics of the belly and the politics of the head. The politics of the belly is in the economy. The most effective decision of the United States for the whole world is the decision from a small number of American leaders who control the economy. So it is the economy, stupid. It is the economy, stupid. It's the economy, stupid, once again. Once the U.S. leadership decides to deal with the rate of exchange, it has reverberating effects all over the world, including Africa. If you want to understand one fundamental relationship between the United States and Africa today, is the activity of two financial institutions in the United States. The MoneyGram business transferring millions of dollars to Africans from the United States in terms of immigrants. And that's one of the reasons why the politics of the belly for Americans and the rest of the world is coming back to affect U.S. relationship within Africa. MoneyGram is one. Western Union is another. And there are many other agencies. So the rate of exchange from the United States has reverberating effect in Africa, because the African bankers, whether they are local or foreign, African policymakers who are passing laws in their own country are all affected by these American decisions. It has serious consequences for U.S. policy in dealing with other areas. Here again, the politics of the belly and the politics of the head in the United States through the rate of exchange affect African foreign policy. And they immediately take you back to the visit of the Pope to Central Africa. You are not only interested in the politics of the belly, you are also interested in justice. Because human beings cannot organize themselves without justice. It is not only the politics of the belly, it is the politics of the spirit. So as the Christian community moves towards Christmas and New Year, the rest of the world who are not Christians are very much part of this activity, because it affects their spirits as human beings as they grapple with life and death issues. That is one of the reasons why, as I look at U.S. policy towards Africa, you talk about immigrants, immigrants, immigrants. This is a very important issue going back to 1776 for these United States. America is a young civilization. And that's the way it is today. As I look at U.S. policy towards Africa and African opinions on and attitudes, all the Africans are affected by this rate of exchange. This is true for Mexicans who get remittances to Mexico and all the Latinos who also benefit. And the politics of the belly, the politics of the head, and the human spirit will be restored. That's the way it is today.
Thank you, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor William Eagle, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineers for today, Nick Ivanov and Jonah Cummings, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. I remember, as the elders say, if a lizard decides to wear trousers, it should know where to put its tail. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. The United States wants to see a strong Sri Lanka, one that is a leader in the international community, contributing to the global economy, promoting human rights, justice, and democracy abroad, and helping to uphold international law. With its entrepreneurial people, abundant resources, and strategic location, Sri Lanka is uniquely positioned to do so, said U.S. Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs designate Thomas Shannon. Speaking at the influential Lakshman Kadirgamar Institute in Colombo on December 16th, Ambassador Shannon said Sri Lanka was an example of the power of citizens to reinvigorate their democracy through the ballot box. We now look to Sri Lanka to also provide inspiration to others around the world, he noted, to show them how justice and compassion can overcome a difficult past and help create a stable and prosperous future and strengthen a nation's security, prosperity, and prestige. As Secretary Kerry and Ambassador Power noted during their visits to Sri Lanka this year, the United States has long worked with the Sri Lankan people to accelerate economic growth, further strengthen democratic institutions, reconcile multi-ethnic and religious communities, promote justice and rule of law, and provide disaster relief. For nearly 60 years, U.S. development assistance has invested in the people of Sri Lanka, in their communities, and in the relationship between our two nations, said Shannon. Our programs have ranged across the country and spanned almost every sector, including agricultural development, environment and natural resources, health, education, democracy and governance, economic growth, and humanitarian assistance. This partnership has resulted in remarkable achievements over the past six decades, controlling and eradicating malaria, modernizing the rail transportation network, improving nutrition, enhancing irrigation, developing chambers of commerce, and much, much more. Our partnership spans virtually all fields of endeavor, and the people of both our nations can expect to reap the benefits, added Shannon. Sri Lanka's future is of global consequence, and the partnership between the people of Sri Lanka and the United States will continue to grow. As Secretary Kerry said in Colombo in May, we believe in the potential of Sri Lanka, the potential of Sri Lanka's people, and I mean all of its people, and I can assure you that the United States, that America will stand with you by your side as you build a stronger democracy and a future that is marked by peace and prosperity after so many years of suffering and hardship.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.